Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Donald Trump's former fixer, Michael Cohen, showing jurors a different side of himself as he testifies at the former president's hush money trial. ABC's Aaron Katursky at Manhattan Criminal Court.
He is measured. He's free of bombast. He is free of hyperbole, just delivering a rather sober bit of testimony.
And Cohen told jurors the lengths Mr. Trump would go to have him kill unflattering stories about the former president before the 2016 election. On hand for support, some of Mr. Trump's supporters, including Republican Senators J.D. Vance and Tommy Tuberville. The nation's largest airlines are suing the Department of Transportation over new rules which require the carriers to disclose ancillary fees. Wreckage from Baltimore's Key Bridge is expected to be removed tonight. The cargo ship Dolly is still beneath the tangled metal and concrete. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Oral arguments are today in a state Supreme Court case that could bring absentee ballot drop boxes back to Wisconsin this year. 2 years ago, the court's former conservative majority ruled nothing in state law allowed for absentee drop boxes anywhere other than local clerks' offices. The August primary is 3 months away. Microsoft's president says the infrastructure in Racine County met for Foxconn played a role in its decision to invest $3 billion in a new AI data center.
No doubt, we are the beneficiaries of that earlier effort. You know, the land that was initially acquired that we're now able to buy, even the electrical infrastructure.
Brad Smith speaking with WISN-TV's Up Front after President Biden's visit last week. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The University of Minnesota Duluth has officially announced its new chancellor. According to the university, Dr. Charles Neese was approved as the school's 10th chancellor by the Board of Regents on Thursday. Neese will begin as chancellor on July 1st, with interim chancellor David McMillan continuing in the role until then to ensure as smooth a transition as possible. Neese had previously served as the vice chancellor at the University of California, Merced, and has 25 years of experience in higher education. A Duluth bike rental company is participating in an e-bike rebate program through the state of Minnesota. According to a Fox 21 report, Traverse Duluth will be part of the program, which will give applicants a discount of $1,500 on the purchase of a bike and accessories. They're hoping the e-bikes will encourage more residents to get out on biking trails if they don't need to do all the hard work of biking themselves. Residents can begin applying for the rebates on June 5th, and certificates will be issued in July. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers lose to the Cardinals. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers lost to the Cards 4-3 Sunday afternoon on Mother's Day. St. Louis, desperate for a win, down 3-1, when manager Ollie Marmol charged the home plate umpire and was ejected from the game.
Yeah, Ollie Marmol's getting upset. You can't blame him.
And this is a boiling point from strike zone to calls. To seven straight losses.
The Cards manager asked if he had a problem with umpire Alan Porter.
No, Alan Porter and Sean Barber are good umpires. That had more to do with getting something going.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
You know, it was a one-run game, but, you know, they left 13 on base. You know, we walked too many guys. We didn't execute. I think offensively and pitching and whatever, it just wasn't a great ball game for us.
The Crew opens the series at home tonight against the Pirates. Men's college basketball. Head coach Sundance Wicks is leaving the UW Green Bay Phoenix after just one season to return to Wyoming, where he served as an assistant coach with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Widespread haze expected today as Canadian wildfire smoke has moved in. Otherwise, partly sunny with highs in the upper 60s. Breezy winds throughout tonight and tomorrow drag our highs down to the low 60s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 67 degrees.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trumpster asked the judge and said, hey, can I not come to court because I want to go to my son's graduation? So here now, from the Raw story, Trump plans Minnesota fundraiser on the day of Barron's graduation. When I graduated, you have a get-together with family and friends. It's kind of a day. A parent shouldn't just be ducking in and out.
You have to be a parent for that. And he is a parent in name only. A pino.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Watch out!
You got me!
The galaxy is safe once again.
In the pretend universe, kids play with pretend guns. In the real world, it's up to us to make sure they don't get their hands on a real gun. If you have a gun in the house, keep it locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by N Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
Tuesday morning on Up North News Radio, we now have wish lists from both parties on what should be in the next farm bill. They are not matchy-matchy.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. I'm going to be joined by a special guest this half hour, but just wanted to give some closing thoughts on my interview last half hour with candidate for the 19th Assembly District, Jared Anderson. First of all, the opinions that I say are mine and not necessarily Jared's. So that's first thing. Second thing, I leveled some very specific criticisms about Mr. Anderson's opponent in the Democratic primary for the assembly seat, current assembly person Ryan Clancy. We got a very thoughtful text in from the 262 that says this. So Maggie Dawn, are you bringing on Ryan Clancy so he can comment on all these accusations of not caring or working for his constituents that me, Maggie, made? I find this last interview an attack on progressive candidates. I hope you are going to be fair and balanced. Thank you so much for the text from the 262. First of all, I didn't say that Ryan Clancy doesn't care. I think he does very, very much care. But I think and care for his constituents and the issues that he speaks on. I believe that his opinions, his stances that he takes on issues are in good faith. In other words, he truly believes the positions that he's taking. However, the call for an elected official is not just to say what you believe, but it is to get things done. I have observed Ryan Clancy as a legislator personally on a day-to-day basis at Milwaukee County. The amount of legislation that Mr. Clancy got passed was minimal, perhaps less than 5. He would introduce 30-plus budget amendments, not a single one would get approved. So what I'm pointing out here is that values and viewpoints on issues, that's great, but you actually need to get things done. And so when I talk about getting things done for constituents, I mean we need to look at a legislator's track record. I mean to say that if a legislator engages in rhetorical speech making but never gets anything done, that's a problem. If a legislator, an elected official, engages in vilification or oversimplification of an issue to the point that it makes compromise and actual policymaking impossible, that isn't getting the job done. I also want to make this clear. I have invited Mr. Clancy on this program. He has not responded to my requests either to decline or set up a time. I invite him again today on the radio to join me here. And I'll say this. I watched Mr. Clancy on the county boardroom floor talk circles sometimes around his colleagues, call people out. Well, here on this forum, he's not going to talk rhetorical circles around me. So I ask him to join me here yet again publicly on this show right now. I'd be happy to debate Mr. Clancy. I'd be happy to engage in a discussion about these issues, about his effectiveness as a legislator. And finally, this is not an attack on progressive candidates. I think progressivism
is an essential part of our current political dialogue. I think progressivism is how we do better, how we raise the tide for all of our ships. I believe in progressive ideals, but I also believe in practicalities of the prudent and the progressive. So I support progressive ideals and values, but what I most support are elected officials and candidates that actually get things done for people, and again, are not worried about self-congratulatory virtue signaling. And when we have folks that are progressive or Democrats that engage in that to the point of making compromise and getting things done impossible, that makes cooperation with conservatives and centrists impossible, I don't stand behind that at all, and I will call it out every day on this show if necessary. So again, very humbly, I ask Mr. Clancy to join me here. I thank the texter from the 262 for calling me out and holding me accountable to giving everybody a microphone if they choose to accept the challenge on this program. Thank you. I now want to bring on my guest, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, public health expert, adjunct professor at Baylor and Morehouse, teaching very much on public health, former City of Milwaukee Health Commissioner, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good to see you, friend. First of all, the last time we talked, I'm not sure I got to ask you some of the foundational questions about your areas of expertise. And so I thought today I would take the opportunity to start there. When people talk about public health, what actually is public health? What does a health commissioner do if your job is to improve public health?
Well, again, thanks for having me back on. Thanks for clearing the air. I agree with you.
Thank you.
And since you asked about like defining public health, and that includes like structural and social determinants of health, elections and voting and campaigning and organizing and all of that falls under social and community context for social and structural determinants of health. So most people, when they think about public health, they just think about like food inspections, right? Like the food inspector, preventing outbreaks, all that good stuff. That is public health, but it's more than that. So it includes pretty much prevention at the community level or systems level. So instead of like a healthcare model where we look at prevention just individually, like, oh, I'm gonna make sure I'm eating enough fruits and vegetables. I'm making sure that I'm exercising enough, you know, getting my steps and my 30 minutes of exercise in every day. That's like individual health, but community and public health is focusing on creating the system so people can do that, as well as addressing policy. So, you know, we're talking about paid family leave, sick leave, like that's public health. So not everybody can take off of work and take care of their kids. You know, Mother's Day was yesterday, so shout out to all the moms out there, as well as those that serve in a mom-like role. So the aunts and the caretakers and everyone else. But I know that's something we've been advocating for quite some time, a national paid sick leave policy. We did have that for a brief period in the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I always say this because I'm not, you know, supporting one presidential candidate over another, but there were many policies that came out of the COVID-19 pandemic emergency that really worked. And yes, a lot of those were allowed to sunset. And we saw huge improvements in childhood poverty, access to food, housing stability, all of these great things. And then once those policies went away, we started seeing a lot of things dialing back, a lot of problems. More and more people are being displaced. More and more kids are going hungry. More and more violence and behavioral issues, you know, crime. You just go on and on and on. But public health is about prevention at the larger level. So, you know, I mentioned food inspection. I talked about paid leave. So maternal and child health or family health. Environmental health, labs. So the City of Milwaukee has an amazing lab. It was like the lab anniversary last week. The National Association for Public Health Labs was in Milwaukee last week hosting their national conference. So that was awesome. And then, of course, all of the other regulatory aspects of public health, working with other systems like law enforcement and school districts and, you know, first responders. So like your EMTs and firefighters and all of that. So emergency preparedness. So there's just so many different angles to public health. And I always say that public health is doing a good job if you don't see us.
Yes.
So, so a lot of people were like shocked when they heard about a health commissioner, you know, making these policies, like, who is this lady? Who does she think she is? And all of this. And I was like, I've been behind the scenes trying to clean up messes and whatnot and try to prevent, you know, the next outbreak, the next disease. but as you all know, COVID-19 really hit all of us. And now we're talking about H5N1, this new virus.
Yes.
About, you know, pasteurization and, you know, having raw milk and, you know, all of these things and the farm workers and looking at rural health and all of that. So, you know, public health, again, is about larger base community systems, violence prevention, just pretty much anything you can think of is tied to public health and prevention of negative outcomes, negative health outcomes, improving the quality of life for all. Equity is a huge point in our work now. We're making sure that we're trying to address some of these longstanding inequities. We briefly talked about housing last time, about
yes.
redlining and segregation, and that a lot of that work is still happening. I see the county tomorrow looks like there's going to be a 5-year anniversary meeting to talk about what the racism as a public health crisis declaration has done for the county. So just, again, larger level, systems level, which impacts all of us individually. So it's all, we're all connected, whether people want to acknowledge it or not. So that's the role. And just another point about a health commissioner. Health commissioner is basically like a police chief, but for health. So we have a lot of regulations and statutes that we have to uphold. So that's our rule book that we follow. Whereas the police chief has their set of laws that they follow. So
my guest this half hour, the ultra knowledgeable public health expert, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, who led the city of Milwaukee at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic through what can be described only as an incredibly tumultuous, politically fraught minefield of public health back in 2020. She has been an adjunct professor at both Baylor and Morehouse teaching on public health. We're going to have to take a couple of quick messages. When we come back, one of the things I want to ask you about is you used a term as we were discussing what really is public health, what do health commissioners do? And that was the phrase health equity. Maybe we've got a little time for you to start digging. What does health equity mean? What is that?
Yes. So years ago, there was a focus on health disparities, which is looking at various groups, whether they be Black, white, women, men, you know, gay, lesbian, trans, you know, just different groups, and seeing that one group is suffering most related to whatever the health topic is. So it could be obesity, it could be, you know, birth outcomes, you know, infant mortality, maternal mortality, which is, you know, basically after you have a child, you're supposed to be able to move forward. and that's not always the case for some people. So it's looking at those individual groups and seeing who's suffering the most and then addressing it. So equity is looking at strategies and ways to improve those health outcomes for those groups.
We'll take just a couple of messages and come back in just a moment with our guest this half hour, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hubdy at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. My guest this hour is my friend and now yours, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, talking about public health, health equity. And we were touching on a little bit in the last segment, and I talked about this on Friday in anticipation of Mother's Day, that we now have rising maternal mortality rates. We have, frankly, an abysmal infant mortality rate amongst the worst amongst countries of comparable wealth in the developed world. What's going on? Why are we not doing better when it comes to expecting moms and maternal mortality, infant mortality, as well as care for brand new moms right after they give birth?
Well,
I know there's a lot in there.
Yeah, I'm like trying to figure out the easiest way to say it. It's basically this like have and have nots mentality, right? Like if you have the means, which means like health insurance, high quality health insurance, the ability to take off of work or not work to stay and take care of yourself and your baby, top quality food, you're able to breastfeed, you know, all of that, the things that can contribute to great outcomes that you have, assuming that you have that and you're doing that, and then you're going to fare well. However, part of the issue is some women are not healthy when they are pregnant, but before they get pregnant. Like, so we talk about something called preconception care. So if you're like stressed out, you're working three jobs, you know, you're, you know, eating fast food and just not really taking care of yourself, chronically dehydrated, not sleeping enough, not getting all of your vitamins, all of that stuff. When it comes time for you to have a baby, you're going to have more challenges, right? Because you don't have that baseline already set that your body is ready to, you know, having a baby is a huge, huge event for them. So the issue is if you don't have that, like I said, that baseline, it's going to be harder for you. And there's more complications, more challenges that women and pregnant people tend to experience during the course of their pregnancy. So when we say like infant mortality is basically the baby doesn't survive past the first year of life. And then maternal mortality is basically the mom dies because of the result of her pregnancy. So there's still like debates on how you measure that, but it could be anywhere from 6 weeks after having the baby to a year after having the baby. So, you know, pregnancy is a huge tax on the immune system. You know, so it's like all of these things that one thinks about when it comes to having a baby. And that's why, you know, you go in a different direction about policy, about access to abortion, abortion services, abortion is healthcare. Some people are not in a position to carry a baby to term, you know, and some people, they, you know, may not have the structures set up to be able to provide for that child. You know, so, you know, it's like we're mammals, right? Like we can reproduce and not everybody should reproduce, right? Depending on the circumstances, they may have contraindications from their physician that, hey, you shouldn't have a baby. I mean, technically for me, because of the medication I'm on for multiple sclerosis, I'm not supposed to have kids anymore. I mean, I'm grateful my son is 25 now, kind of got that out of my system, but just to reflect on if I was in a situation where I wanted to have a baby, I would be super high risk for mm-hmm. myself and the child. So, you know, preventing the pregnancy and all of that is important. So
I think about even, you know, as you're talking, Jeanette, a number of my friends that have had babies. I'm happily the Aunt Maggie from the friend vantage point, very fortunate in that regard. I always ask them, how much money are you spending on vitamins and improved nutrition, both before they conceived and during pregnancy and then after? And the amount of those dollar figures are absolutely incredible. If I then start including, and I always ask them these questions because I'm curious and I want to understand, what does it cost a person who has access, has the luxury of being able to afford those things? When I add in midwife assistance or a doula, as well as lactation consultants, all of the necessary checkups, very few people fall into the category where they can have all of that support. And those are all factors, if we think about it from a public health perspective, is we don't have an equal access system or an equal payer system when it comes to preconception and maternal health support during pregnancy. And we're seeing the results of that. And most other Western European countries, those systems are in place and they are accessible mm-hmm. to all at a fairly equal cost level. That is simply completely absent within the United States infrastructure, as well as the fact that many employers don't guarantee paid leave. Mm-hmm. all of these things have these multiplying impacts for young mothers. If there was one or two policies, Dr. Kowalik, that you would like to see changed that you think could have an enormous positive impact for families and working people here in Wisconsin and the United States, what would they be?
I mean, definitely Medicaid expansion when I say that, people kind of get bristly. Everybody should have access to high quality healthcare. And I'm talking about the healthcare that our senators and Congress people have in DC, the Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Platinum Plan. That's what everybody should have access to, the PPO, see whoever you want. Everything is covered, even acupuncture and massage. You know, that's what I'm talking about. And then secondly, paid family leave. You should be able to take time off, adequate time off. I'm not talking about 2 weeks. I'm not talking about 4 weeks or 6 weeks. You should be able to take maybe 12 weeks or 6 months off to bond with your baby, to take care of your, you know, if you have other kids, just to really get in a groove of raising this new baby and establishing the connection. And you talk about other countries, you know, you look at other other policies that they have, and we just get like so like I'm not gonna say hate or be jealous, but just like, why can't we do that, you know? Yeah. And a lot of it is a lot of blocking from different lobbies and groups that are like pro-business. I'm a small business owner, so I get it. However, if me allowing my staff to take adequate time off to, you know, get bonded with your baby, right? And make sure everything is good and there's no issues or complications, that's a benefit to the greater good. That's a benefit to the community and the economy. So shifting from a short-term vision to a long-term vision of it, I think is really important. So those would be my two policies off that.
My guest this half hour, my friend and now yours, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, adjunct professor of public health at Baylor and Morehouse Universities. Thank you so much for being here again, Jeanette. Always good to see you.
Likewise.
I'm going to be talking about my top pet peeves when I have to fly on an airplane when we come back. Don't worry, it relates to politics too. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Of course, I want to know what your big peeves are. Don't go anywhere. Join us for the last half hour of this Monday edition. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Back in just a moment.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Today, many farmers are discovering new ways to showcase their produce and connect with consumers through avenues like Community Supported Agriculture, or CSA. I'm Charity Seebecker from the Midwest Farm Report, and Paul Dittman, Director of Emerging Markets at Compere Financial, shares more about how this works.
We've seen people doing some more creative things, too, and putting together winter boxes where it might be storage vegetables that are being delivered after the regular growing season has ended here in Wisconsin, or adding on value-added products. I've got a couple people that are doing meat CSAs, where they're doing once-a-month deliveries into the city of Chicago, and maybe they deliver to one location, and that one person who takes the meat into their garage or whatever it is, they're selling to other people in the neighborhood, and maybe they get a little bit of a discount on their purchases. But it's been a great model because, I mean, you could be anywhere. If you only have to make a delivery once a month, it's not too much trouble, right?
I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this. When I think of my childhood, the fields were my playground and the barn was my sanctuary. Growing up on a farm was more than a way of life. It was the roots of my story in agriculture. I'm Charity Seebecker from the Midwest Farm Report, and now I get to bring you those stories from farmers from all over the state at MidwestFarmReport.com. You can head over there and sign up for our e-newsletter so you can be better connected to the stories of what's happening in the industry.
Don't let sick calves get you down and drain your profits. Get your calves up and moving with BioVet's Calf Electrolyte. Our BaseLite product contains balanced electrolytes for restoring and maintaining proper fluid levels in scouring calves. BaseLite also provides additional energy to support recovery. It's easy to mix, and calves drink it down to the last drop. Learn more about BaseLite at bio-vet.com.
Innovation, that's
BioVet.
I'm Charity Seebecker from the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 472.5. Up 2.75. New crop corn closed at 4.93, up a penny. Cash beans closed at 12.19.5, that was up a half. And new crop beans closed at 12.12.25, up 6.5 cents. Cash wheat closed at 6.87, that was up 23.5 cents. And new crop wheat closed at 7.06.5, up 24 cents. June Class 3 milk contract is trading at 21.25, that's up 74 cents. And July milk is trading at 20.11, up 21 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 197.25, that was up 6 cents. 40-pound block cheese had no change and closed at 198, and the double A butter closed up 3.75 at 302.75. Be sure to stay up to date with us on all things agriculture by downloading our app. You can find it at thefarmwi.com. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Widespread haze expected today as Canadian wildfire smoke has moved in. Otherwise, partly sunny with highs in the upper 60s. Breezy winds throughout tonight and tomorrow drag our highs down to the low 60s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 68.
My mom has taken up going to the park to practice yoga.
My dad's going to a club, but not a book club, a salsa club.
Finding new hobbies comes with age.
My mom has started getting lost and not knowing where she's going.
Becoming lost or disoriented doesn't. Confusion with time or place may be a sign of Alzheimer's. An early diagnosis can help improve the quality of life for your loved one. Learn the warning signs of Alzheimer's at 10signs.org. Brought to you by the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
Dr. Karen Tamarius, she's a political psychiatrist, and we're talking about how to talk to people with which we do not agree.
Think of the mind as a rider on an elephant. The conscious part is the rider, and the emotional part is the elephant. If you want the person to change their mind, you need to talk with the elephant, not the rider.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Crude and Dom.
Dominic is in Europe on the holiday road, but you can hear some of the greatest radio shows ever in his absence. Tune in all week long.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6.
Already I'm so lonesome I could die.
So kiss me. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks to my guest this afternoon, Jared Anderson, candidate for Wisconsin State Assembly District 19, as well as Dr. Jeanette Koala talking a little public health. But I wanted to end on somewhat of a lighter note this afternoon. I've got some travel coming up, which of course got me thinking about airlines. And I don't know, was it 2 weeks ago, Anya, we had a little chit chat about the top 10 things I hate about drivers and bad driving habits and all that stuff. So I figured we'd do it about flying because there's plenty to hate these days about flying. I'm a fairly frequent flyer. I do it less than I used to in some of my prior roles, but I'd say I get on an airplane with some degree of regularity. And yeah, I've got a list of peeves a mile long. I wonder what yours are. If you are a traveler or even an infrequent flyer, perhaps even more so if you're an infrequent flyer, what are the things that you hate most either about airlines or flying or the things that other people do that you cannot stand? I've got a whole bunch of them. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What are your top flying pet peeves? All of this, not just because sparked off, not just because I have to do some traveling and I'm dreading it as always, but also because there was a fairly in-depth interview and piece recently that came out this past weekend about Mayor Pete. He's actually not a mayor anymore. He's the Secretary of Transportation heading up the U.S. Department of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, former presidential candidate, who's been, you know, slogging away at the DOT for now nearly 4 years. Now, the interesting thing is that transportation secretaries usually are only one-termers. Other cabinet-level officials for presidencies, if the incumbent wins a second term, a lot of secretaries will stick around and serve another term. That isn't the case for transportation secretaries. So it's highly likely that Pete's term as a cabinet-level official in the Biden administration will be coming to a close soon, and he has had a go of it with the transportation department. There was the enormous backlog that occurred at California ports. This was a couple of years ago, kind of coming out of COVID, but they couldn't, I mean, basically a couple of California ports shipping was shut down. There was that massive train derailment in Ohio, which spurred a huge federal investigation. Of course, we had the Key Bridge collapse that just occurred in Baltimore. And then the pandemic, the various airline meltdowns, the Boeing door ripping off, Southwest's entire system going kablooing, the air traffic controller shortages, which are the worst they've ever been, and it goes on and on. This has been a very tumultuous 4 years for Secretary Buttigieg. So I'm going to share a little bit from the article, but I had to start with actually a couple of my flying pet peeves. And again, I'm interested to hear what yours are. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. So my first pet peeve about this starts before I've even gotten into the airport. I usually will take an Uber or a Lyft or some other shared ride service to the airport. And my big pet peeve is, sometimes I have to travel in business attire because I'm going right to the speech or right to whatever the thing is. And I kid you not, I would say it's about 75% of any shared ride service driver that I've interacted with will watch me in my suit hobbling around with my luggage, and there is no assistance offered. They just kind of look at me, or they do the late trunk opening, or like the late, oh, I'll get out and help you after I've already hefted it into the trunk of the vehicle. That's one of my definite top 10 pet peeves. I think I went more than 10. I think I'm 11 deep on my list this afternoon. Anya, do you have a favorite pet peeve about flying?
Oh, man, just one? Well, I'll say to your point, it's occurring to me in this moment that the only times rideshare drivers have gotten out to help me with bags is if I am traveling with my partner who happens to be a man. So I'll throw that forward. I've had taxi drivers, like when we went to Texas, leap out to grab our bags, but not when it's just me alone. That's occurring to me right now. but also mine.
Which is so bizarre. Like, isn't that, you would think that, like, woman traveling alone,
yeah,
some chivalry, yeah, you know, that would spur the help. But no, then, it's when there's both of you.
But then it's, I think it comes back to, like, well, now I'm being observed being unhelpful by, like, someone who matters, a dude. Like, that's where I think it comes from. I think it comes from, I know I'm supposed to help, but when it's just, anyway, there's a whole show I could do. Anyways, my one that I'll bring to the table, I cannot stand when people in airports treat the whole airport as a daycare. I don't mind, you know, there's areas in the airport for kids to hang out. If you say, you know, this corner in there, and they're being observed, but the number of times I'll be sitting alone at a gate for a flight that's not from like 6 hours from now, and a toddler wanders into the gate, no parents around. Okay. And he wanders off and you go, well, maybe he's traveling alone. He seemed quite professional, but I doubt it. I hate that because they always seem to find me and the aura of a teacher around me. They're like, can you help me find my mommy? It's like, no, I can't. I'd like to read my book, please.
No, I just want to sit here and read my book.
This is the most calm part of this day for me, child. Please return home.
Right. Man, there was a moment, I don't know when it was, maybe 5-6 years ago, where they were talking about allowing people to use their cell phones on airplanes. And I thought to myself, if you want to bring back Amtrak and make it a robust transportation system, allow people to use cell phones on an airplane. And I certainly would be the first to abandon flying for all of eternity. Like, no way I'm getting on an airplane if people can use their phones.
110%. And I will echo a comment in our chain, having to maniacally listen for announcements for your plane being delayed. As a hearing impaired person, oh my gosh, the overhead announcements, my biggest pet peeve.
Which brings me back to that old SNL skit where it's the New York subway system. This is if you're, you know, of a certain ilk, right? And it was wah, 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 right? And no chance of understanding it. The other one I hate on that same note, thanks for the texter, I believe, on Facebook or message on Facebook that came in there. When they change the gate 5 minutes before you're supposed to, like, I've got my noise cancelers on. I'm reading the book. I'm not. What are you? Why is that happening? It is the worst. I have nearly missed airplanes because of that. I have a bevy of traveling stories. My most recent one was, I think I was in Detroit. And I left my noise canceling headphones at a gate, and it's a huge airport. You know, it's like miles between certain concourses. And I was in the last boarding group on a United flight. And then I realized I don't have my headphones. And I was like, hey, can you, I gotta go back over there and get them. And of course you can't just leave your stuff with a gate agent, 'cause that's, you know, now taboo. So here's Maggie Dawn with, you know, suitcase, biz gear on, literally engaging in parkour through the Detroit airport, running out of breath, perspiring. I did retrieve my noise-canceling headphones and made it back to my gate in time. And then, you know, I was basically had engaged in a 20-minute running workout, so I was kvetching a little on the plane, I would say. I felt sorry for my seatmates. That's just one of the more recent ones. So my next peeve that I want to share with y'all is the unpreparedness in security checkpoint lines. What? I'm sorry. What have you been doing for the last 30 minutes that you have been in line? You're at the front of the line. Yes, you have to remove laptops and your shoes and your bag of liquids. Yep, those have to come out. Oh, you didn't know that there's a limitation on the size of liquids that you can take out? Where have you been for the last 23 years? Now, one of the cool things I think they've got at Midway Airport in Chicago, South Chicago, is that they do it like ski hills. There's the Black Diamond for the very, very experienced traveler, the Blue Square for the moderately experienced traveler. And if you have no idea what you're doing, and or families with the strollers and the special stuff and the yada yada, then they've got that lane. I thought that was genius, because then at least, you know, And I sometimes, listen, I give a lot of bandwidth to people that have to travel with kids. That has to be just nightmarish. It's an impossible thing to pull off. Especially since nowadays it's also frowned upon, a wee bit taboo, to give the baby, you know, the cough syrup on the gums. I think that went the way of us kids that were raised in the 70s. But very hard. So I never try to get my ire up if I see a family struggling through security checkpoint. It's just, you require a lot of stuff when you're caring for toddlers and babies, and it's challenging to get all of that through the security checkpoint. No. I'm talking about the people that should know, that are standing in line for 30 minutes and then don't know and create a whole glut. My other beef are the people that just never, ever make it to the airport on time and need to cut the entire security checkpoint line because they are now late for their flights. Oy, that... No, you can't skip. Now, I've never told anybody no because karma, I will always let someone go ahead of me. But boy, does that, if we all were doing that, this system wouldn't work. But there are those people that just think, I can get here 5 minutes before my flight and cut everyone in line. And you know, you can just be inconvenienced. Next peeve, I'm a frequent Southwest flyer. Love me some Southwest. I love the open seating. Anya's a fan too. You like this? You're a Southwest fan.
I am a recent Southwest fan. Now, Southwest is one of those groups that makes really quiet announcements that has gotten me before. But otherwise, I'm a big fan of the Southwest.
Yeah, I love the idea of the open seating plan. But here's what ticks me off. Why are people lining up 30 minutes before boarding is starting at Southwest? Why is that a thing? You literally have a number in line. You don't have to stand in line. You have a number. Now serving A23. Why are you in line? 35 minutes, 30 minutes, 25. Why are you in line at all before they're like, we're about to begin boarding? Then, you know, rationally, you would then queue up in your assigned space in line. If you're not familiar with Southwest boarding, everybody, you can sit in any seat that's available, but you have to line up in order. And as you check in online, everybody's given an assigned number that you line up. Number one is first. They get to go on first and pick their desired seat. But it seems to be this common practice for people to line up even though they have an assigned place in line. It's very bizarre, which leads me to my next gripe, which is on all other airlines but Southwest, there's some version of boarding groups, right? And the thing that always blows my mind is that the people in boarding groups at the very last boarding group, so like boarding group number 4 or 5, there's usually 5 or 6 boarding groups, the last boarding groups will be huddled up by the gate, right? Blocking everyone in the earlier boarding groups. I was, hey, are you waiting for boarding group 3? No, I'm boarding group 6. Well, what are you doing here? Go, did you get out of the way? I don't understand what's going on there. There's also the weird at those airlines, the sort of boxing out. It's like merging on a highway when your boarding group gets called and everybody's, well, trying to check out the other person. Are they going to butt in line first, or am I going to go? And just watching that entire dynamic. I'm going to come back, tell you a little bit more about Mayor Pete and his time as Secretary of the Department of Transportation. And I'll hit you with a few more of my flying gripes because it's Monday and, you know, seemed like a fun thing to talk about. Very Monday-ish, isn't it? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Don't go anywhere and feel free to join us with your flying gripes. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
Hold me like you'll never let me go. Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinair on Air.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Switching to solar power can be a bright idea for your wallet. Here are 3 reasons. first. You could save big money on your electric bills. Forbes magazine says an average of $1,500 a year, and over the life of your solar, it's $25,000 to $33,000. Number two, you can take advantage of tax credits to help it get paid for and installed. Now, lots of states like Wisconsin waive property and sales tax on solar, and the federal government recently passed a bunch of new tax benefits too. Those are your tax dollars at work, so let's put them to work for you. And number three, solar panels can boost your home's resale value. Now, if you don't get enough sunlight, it might not pencil out for you, but man, that chance to save $1,500 a year is definitely worth checking out. Okay, folks, that was your Work Money Minute. For more tips like these, go to workmoney.org. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy, saying take good care.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network, closing out our Monday show. Don't worry, folks. You got the Devil's Advocates coming up next. But if you'd like to join my list of gripes about airplane flying, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. This was all spurred by the fact I've got some travel coming up and also a little profile on Transportation Secretary Mayor Pete Buttigieg. A couple of interesting things. You know, he would be entitled to some private flying, private airline flying as a cabinet level member. But the guy, he flies commercial all the time. And as he put it, he always declines. He doesn't sit in first class. He just does it with the regular folks. And he puts it, you eat what you cook. In other words, how would I be able to help and advocate for consumers in the airline industry if I wasn't having the same experiences that people are as consumers? And I thought, boy, yeah, that's a good hallmark of leadership. I call it the bagel rule. And the bagel rule that I've always lived when I've been in leadership positions, either in a formal way or in informal ways, is I'm never asking, you know, the administrative assistant or anybody else to go get the bagels for the meeting. The bagel rule is I go get the bagels and the coffee. That there's no job that I would ever ask anybody else to do or nor circumstances that I myself would not be also willing to do and would do and do at some points in time. And I thought that little observation about Transportation Secretary Buttigieg speaks volumes, I think, about who he is as a person, as well as the fact that because he flies so much, he often will get offered the old upgrade to, you know, the United Business Class Plus, which, okay, I'll get back to my list of peeves and then tell you about how he handles the upgrades. Here's this. How many different sorts of tickets does there need to be on a single airplane? Why are there five different sections? Maybe I sound like a troglodyte, but I remember when there was just first class and coach, you know, simple. Now it's the Coach Plus, Coach Plus Plus, Coach Standard Plus Business. But I cannot keep this straight. I do not understand the pricing. It's very frustrating. But back to Mayor Pete. When Mayor Pete gets an upgrade on an airline, he doesn't himself take it. He gives it to the most junior person on his team or the tallest person that's traveling with him. And as a six-footer myself, I said, bless you, Mayor Pete, because I cannot fly Spirit Airlines. That is a no-go zone for anybody that is basically 5'10 or over, because your knees literally touch the back of the person's chair in front of you. Which brings me to not my top number one peeve. People may be surprised about this. My number one peeve, it's still a peeve that made the top 10. But the reclining of the chairs, you just don't do that. If you must, I believe it should be a rule that you must inquire of the person seated behind you. Is it okay with you? Would you mind if? I would really like it. I've had knee surgery. I'm having some pain. My leg is falling asleep. I wear compression stockings. I would really appreciate it if you would kindly allow me to recline. Is that okay? This should be new rule by Maggie Dawn, because as a 6-footer, usually carrying, I try not to check a bag, so I usually have my business stuff with me. So think laptop, what have you. And all of a sudden, it never fails. I got the person that doesn't just recline. No. They don't do it gently. I've got the recliners that all of a sudden, out of middle of nowhere, after you've gotten your drink and the laptop and you've got them all precariously positioned on your tray table, fires back the seat, which usually ends up with laptop and or Diet Coke in my lap. If you're gonna recline, ask. If you can't even do that, do it gently. Gently, people, gently, so that I can reposition my knees. I think there was some contraption that for a while people could buy to like keep the chair in front of you from reclining.
I've seen those. Yeah, you would hook it onto the armrest and it would stop it from going back. I wonder how many fights were started when someone discovered that on the back of their seat.
That's what I'm saying. Like there is no way you could get me to use one of those in today's current flying climate, because everyone is on their about to lose their marbles all of the time. All right. I will finish a couple of my other peeves. By the way, I just want to share this. Mayor Pete's gotten quite a lot done for the American consumer when it comes to flying. There's been two major rules put in place that were new. It's the automatic refund to passengers if flights are canceled or significantly delayed and they choose not to travel. The old trick was, oh, well, it was delayed because of weather, so you got to wait around. And if you cancel, that's on you. Money taken. That's not the rule anymore. And the other is a significant mandate around transparency in the different fee loads on different airlines, which I think is a monster improvement. They also have now a website called flightrights.gov, started under Pete Buttigieg as transportation secretary. You can find out what airlines agree to do. And they're working on accessibility measures for folks that are disabled, which I think is critical. I don't know about you, but I find an airplane lavatory next to impossible to use. How the heck does someone that has additional needs use that? But it wouldn't be fair if I left you hanging with the rest without sharing the rest of my airplane peeves. So here they are. And I will save the best for last. Folks that cannot put their luggage in the overhead compartment and look to the 6-foot lady standing next to them to put their 80 pounds, I don't know how they fit it into a carry-on luggage into the overhead. Note this criticism does not apply to folks that actually legitimately need some assistance or older people. I happily help them in any way that I can. But the completely physically able people that are just looking for me to do their work for them, it's a little bit much. This gets me to my next one. Gentlemen who put their suit coats, their trench coats, their laptop bags, and their carry-on all in the overhead bin, shame on you. Of course, the man-spreading in the seats, the hogging of the armrests. Doesn't everybody know if you sit in the middle, you get the armrest? That's just the rule. But my top number one peeve of all peeves when I'm flying is this. You're not at home. Turn your speakerphone off. I don't need to hear your video game nor your conversation. Be aware of the people around you. It's just common courtesy. There should be a no speakerphone rule in public, period, but especially in the airport. That's all I got for y'all this afternoon. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with more tomorrow here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You got the Devil's Advocates up next for you.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, executive producer Luke Mathers joins us at 10:33. In hour number two, what would a second Trump term mean for your health care? Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
One, two, three.
What you doing?
4, 5, 6. Counting the first place awards from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association.
WISS in Oshkosh for the best promo. WAUK in Waukesha, best Maggie Dawn show web story. WMDX in Madison, best web story about the Max Inc. radio show. And WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids for best show, interview, and promo.
Informed, entertained, connected.
And winning.
Your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.